the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. With me is my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, the show that you should absolutely be listening to. If you haven't, come on. It's time. It's draft season. This is episode 516. It's the second show of the week, recording on Thursday afternoon. Seth, how are things now? There's not a whole lot in the Cardinals world, but stuff's happening in the NFL. It's kind of fun right now.
Yeah, and there's a lot in the Cardinals orbit, so you know it's not directly the Cardinals, but it is Cardinals by proxy or things of that nature.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's going well. I mean, Justin and I got one show in this week, so if you're a patron, you've heard it. It's posted. We talked wide receivers, so as you said, if you're a Cardinals fan, highly recommend it. We delve into the receivers in general and talk a lot about, you know, a lot of these guys. And so it's just interesting that this is, you know, we're in this time right now where all of this stuff is going on and, you know, it's not even the NFL Combine. So it's that time of year. The Combine comes up in a little over a week, and that's going to give us a ton of fodder to discuss, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where the rumors start to fly. Probably going to be some deals being made at that time. The Combine, we're recording on a Thursday. The Combine comes up in 11 days, so the 26th of February. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out, because the one thing that we've heard and one of the things that I'll caution people on now, and even with, you know, when Jess and I talk, is that the NFL is really, really pushing to have things that are happening a little more tight-lipped, because everybody is able to gamble on this stuff now. So just when you see reports of things, just remember that, you know, if you're just interested in the information, that's the way to go about it. Don't take it as gospel and go waste your hard-earned money on it, because even the best are going to get fooled right now, and there's a reason that it's much quieter right now than it typically is, right, post Super Bowl, where just the rumor mill really starts up.
Yeah, it's been remarkably quiet, but there's that what has been happening right now is a bunch of like coach movements still. There are things are finalizing, and we're going to talk about that specifically. There are a pair of coaches, former Cardinals coaches, that one is on the way out and one on the way in. It's kind of a surprise, but you know, it affects the Cardinals, because we'll talk specifically the San Francisco 49ers right now in the division. They are going through a lot of coaching attrition. I guess the biggest news is that after Kyle Shanahan was asked, I mean, the problem was, like, they, you know, reporters ask these questions too quickly after the game. Do you expect all your assistants to be back? He just lost the Super Bowl. He hasn't given that any thought. He hasn't done any of the evaluation, given it any thought. They're still mourning that loss. And then, you know, it was like 2 days later, he's on a conference call and says that Steve Wilks has been let go. And that's the most significant thing, for a couple of reasons. There's a Cardinal spin on this to begin with. Steve Wilks hired as defensive coordinator for the 49ers just after one season. But it's important to note that the last two defensive coordinators that the 49ers had lasted only a couple years. Well, DeMeco Ryans was only the DC for 2 years, but he didn't get fired. He got hired as a head coach. Before that, it was Robert Saleh got hired as a head coach. And we know the plight that Steve Wilks has been in. He felt he got the raw deal here in Arizona in 2018, which he absolutely did, is in part of the Brian Flores lawsuit about hiring practices. He felt spurned when he had the success that he did before last season, 2022, as the interim head coach of the Carolina Panthers, and they looked good late in the year, but ultimately they went a different direction, so he felt spurned again. And so after looking at a few jobs, after seeing the 49ers become like head coach factory there for defensive coordinators, like, I'm going to go hook myself up to this train, get hired next year or in 2 years, and it didn't happen. They fired him. And the top reaction that has been so far is Wilks was made the scapegoat. You've got some hard numbers and some information, and because that's an easy take to make if you haven't watched the 49ers. You just look at statistically, oh, they had one of the best defenses in the NFL all season, and they just blew a lead in the Super Bowl. Kyle Shanahan is scapegoating his defensive coordinator. It's not that simple, right?
Right, and you know, it's interesting when you look at a lot of the guys who cover the Niners, and typically when things happen like this, that's where I go. One of my, you know, actually good friends in real life, Kyle Posey, runs Niners Nation. I talk to him virtually every day on text, and not just about the Niners, but just in general of life. And you know, I text him after the news, and you know, it was interesting to get his take on it because he kind of saw the writing on the wall and basically it said that you have a guy in Wilks that was probably gonna go unless they won a Super Bowl, because it's really hard to fire a
Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator.
Yeah. And so, and you know, I'll just read some of the things that Kyle has said. And I said this on the Tuesday show. I don't know if people remember, but he basically called it, and he said, you know, he jokingly said, "Real, I can't guarantee that anybody in the world will be alive on Sunday vibes," when Matt Maiocco asked Shanahan on whether Steve Wilks would be back. And he said, "I expect all our coaches to be back." And so you look at it, and Shanahan kind of said, it has to do with the way we play linebackers and stuff like that. The way Fred and Dre have done it over the years, we want to tie things together. Just with his background, it was harder than it needed to be. And what that means is there was a lot of discontent, and maybe not outwardly by the players or things like that, but there's a lot of discontent with how Steve Wilks utilized his all-pro linebacker, Fred Warner, and one of the better, you know, non-all-pro linebackers in the league, Dre Greenlaw. And when you look at that, and, you know, Fred was an all-pro again this year and you know, had an extremely good year, but he had a bulk number type of year. If you kind of go back and look at it, like, you know, 132 tackles, career high. But most of his tackles were further down the field than normal. He had a career high in interceptions and forced fumbles, you know, really good. I mean, not even good, amazingly great season from Fred Warner. And the idea was that they didn't like the way he was used, and not just, you know, they as in the Niners, but the players as well. And that's a really interesting thing, because, you know, when you look at it from the outside, you think, oh my gosh, this guy just had one of the best seasons of his career. And realistically, he's looking at it like, I didn't play as well as I could. I was an all pro. Yeah, I was a pro bowler, but this was a down year for me. And, you know, you and I were talking about it off the air. The reality became that there was just a disconnect between how the front and the back of the defense were used. And you're talking about the most expensive front seven in the NFL. I mean, between Javon Hargrave, Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, and then trading for Chase Young, you know, drafting Eric Armstead and signing him. Like I said, Dre Greenlaw's, you know, utilize or paid very handsomely for what he does. There was there's a lot of investment on that side of the ball. And so for them to not feel like they're being used properly, it was interesting. And, you know, I was talking to Kyle the other day and he's like, he's just not creative. He goes, his creativity was like using Jair Brown, who I believe was a rookie, but I could be wrong. If I'm wrong about that, I apologize. You know, his creativity is using Jair Brown in the box. That's never been his game. And every time he did, Brown got bowled over. It took 10 weeks to rush Bosa once from the A-gap. So, you know, something that we see with Micah Parsons, Myles Garrett, you know, the highlights of him standing over the center and playing games, and Nick Bosa's basically just, you know, sat on the defensive left side and kind of left there. And you know, the last thing he said was he was in a tough spot. And obviously that's, you know, realistic. You're talking about the best defense in the NFL the past two seasons, right? Under D'Amico Ryans, and a guy who left and took Houston to heights that nobody really expected. And then the comment that stuck with me was there was no adapting. And that's something that we've seen and heard a lot about Wilkes, right?
Oh, that was absolutely one of the issues that he had here in Arizona in 2018. He said that they were going to be a hybrid, that they're going to be adaptable. And one of the things that Michael Bidwell was a little disillusioned about is that it was absolutely 100% 4-3 uncreative. Like what he did in Carolina was exactly what he did in Arizona. That, you know, you look at some of the numbers too. Now, some of the actual numbers over the course of the season look fantastic. They were top 10 defense, number 8 in yards allowed. They were number 3 in rush defense, number 3 in points allowed. But you dive deep in. So starting with that game against the Cardinals in week 15, so you go back 7 games. The Cardinals kind of broke, like we joke, they broke the 49ers defense, because since that time, over the final 7 games, including the postseason, they gave up an average of 17 points a game over the season. They gave up a touchdown more per game, starting with the Cardinals. They gave up 50 yards more rushing on average. From over the last several games, over the 7 games, they gave up an average of 40 more rushing yards than they had. They were still okay on the yards, but then the postseason came, and they weren't a great defensive team. And so you look at the metrics over the final third of the season, and they went from being elite to being pedestrian defensively. And there's another factor about this. I mean, it was almost like they hired him, but they didn't really hire him. You didn't hire him to do his defensive system, because you know what they didn't do? They didn't hire any of it. He didn't get his guys on defense. They threw him into that defense to lead a staff that was already in place, almost as if they're like, all right, we'll give you the 1-year flyer so you can go be a head coach. Like it was a favor to someone, almost.
Yeah, and there was just, you know, from the beginning, there was too much disconnect between the head coach and Steve. And that just seems like one of those situations where, you know, this team in general felt like they knew what was coming.
Yeah.
And it never came. And then they were kind of surprised that the defense was different. Right. And, and in the playoffs, that's, you know, and I joked about it, but it wasn't really a joke. I mean, like, honestly, like, you go back and you mentioned it, you go back to that game. Listen, I mean, before that game, before the Cardinals game in December, which they won 45-29. I mean, like, everybody kind of ho-hum, whatever. Before that game, they'd given up over 100 yards rushing three times. 105 to the Cardinals, 160 in a loss to the Cleveland Browns, and 134 in a loss to the Cincinnati Bengals. Remember, before the Cardinals game, they were, or out of coming out of the Cardinals game, they were 11-3. So they had three losses, and in two of those losses, they gave up their most yards rushing of the season. The Cardinals ran for 234 yards. I mean, that's an astounding number. But look at the numbers after that, and, you know, look at how those games went. They lost to the Baltimore Ravens, gave up 102 yards rushing. Lost to the Los Angeles Rams, gave up 109 yards rushing. Barely eked out a win in the playoffs over the Green Bay Packers, gave up 136 yards rushing. Barely eked out a win over the Lions, gave up 182 yards rushing, then obviously lost the Super Bowl, gave up 130 yards rushing. 150 yards rushing per game in the playoffs. I'm sorry, like, there's just not any way you can look at a team that during the season, didn't, you know, before the Cardinals game, had three games where they gave up over 100 yards rushing. They were giving up less than 90 yards per game. In the playoffs, they were giving up over 60 more yards per game.
That's absurd.
And what people don't get about that is that takes away from the offense. That takes away from that dynamic multiple offense that's able to do a lot of things. And like you pointed out, Jess, like, 24 points per game, you're giving up seven more points per game. You know, people were really lauding the defense for their effort against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I don't think there was a super negative.
No, I will say, like, they look, that the first half of that game, their defense was very good.
But you have to remember, too, this is not the Kansas City Chiefs that won the Super Bowl even really last year, where they were number one in points per game. The Chiefs were 15th in points per game, 21 points per game. So holding them to 19 points isn't exactly reminiscent of the 85 Bears, right? Like, it wasn't like it's still, don't get me wrong, it's still a nice accomplishment. Like, you keep down a fantastic play caller and quarterback, but it wasn't like you were keeping down last year's Chiefs team, right? It was just a different thing. And I think too many people are parsing together separate things to say, like, oh, well, you know, he had the number three ranked scoring defense. Okay. But over the last seven games, including the playoffs, he was giving up 24. His defenses were giving up 24 points per game.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
You know, and so, you know, or like I said, they're going with, oh, they held down the Chiefs to 19 and Patrick Mahomes to 19 points.
That's how the Chiefs were winning games.
Yeah, but most teams did that this year. I mean, the Chiefs were held to 19 points or less in eight games.
Oh my God.
Or sorry, nine games.
Yeah.
Like that, like, you're not talking about last year's Chiefs.
It's really interesting, the whole notion with Wilkes too, because I know he's kind of the poster child. He and Brian Flores obviously are the poster children. Those are the faces of that lawsuit. But let's not forget, it's not like Wilkes has been ascending since 2018. Hey, he was an ascendant. When he was hired, that was a move that people loved because he had paid his dues. He'd moved his way up. But if you look at what's happened since then, terrible year. I think historically bad year for the Cardinals in 2018. He went as DC of the Browns, also not good. Went to be DC over in Missouri in college. Guess what? Not good. The only real solid seasons he's had in his role as a defensive coordinator or assistant coach or whatnot have both come in Carolina. He came in Carolina before when he got hired by the Cardinals. He came in Carolina when he was the interim head coach. And anywhere else, he's not been great. And that's the reality. And you know,
but it all comes down to this, man. And like, this is for better or worse, this is, you know, who he is as a coach, and you do respect it. I mean, I want people to understand that, like, you respect this portion of it, but when you basically say, this is who I am, this is what I coach, I'm either going to succeed or fail that way, then you're putting it on yourself. And if you do succeed, then you can go, look at what I've done. And if you fail, then you can say, they just don't understand what I'm doing. And that's kind of what's happened here. And again, I'm not saying Wilkes is a failure. He had a fantastic defense this year. But the reality is the expectation and what they wanted from their defense was not met. And that is why he was let go, because insubordination is like way too strong a word. So I don't want people to think I'm throwing that out there, but that's kind of what it felt like, right? Like he wasn't willing to adapt his philosophy to what the 49ers have done so well. Yeah. And instead wanted the 49ers to play in his scheme. And you kind of wonder, you know, from that selfish standpoint, if that is like, hey, look, you know, my system works, come hire me as a head coach type of thing, right?
It very, very well could have been. The coordinator's going to be interesting this offseason because they keep bleeding coaches. Comes with some success, Kyle Shanahan's, but they're bleeding coaches and assistants. Obviously, they fired Wilkes, but Clint Kubiak, he's headed out of town. Anthony Lynn's headed out of town, joining Cliff Kingsbury's staff in Washington. But I didn't want to talk so much about that. The other Cardinals connection was announced on Thursday, and that is the Washington Commanders are filling out their offensive staff under Cliff Kingsbury, and there's a real notable name. They have a new assistant quarterbacks coach, and that name is David Blau, which I think is kind of cool. One, David Blau, in a short time here in Arizona, was – very likable. Like he started the last two games of 2022 under Cliff Kingsbury. He was 0-7 as an NFL starter. In fact, the only wins that he'd, you know, other than, I don't know about all preseason games when he was in Detroit, but he'd never been part of a win in an NFL regular season game. And then this last preseason, he got to be comeback kid, leading the Cardinals to two preseason wins. Before they cut him, and he ended up in Detroit's practice squad. But Blau hanging up the cleats to go into coaching. And for me, it's kind of cool. So you're like, oh, you notice kind of the things that happened with Cliff Kingsbury. And of all the, like, it was clear that David Blau impressed him as a student of the game, as a potential coach and things like that. Because, you know, Cliff in his first offensive staff, when he's not a head coach, David Blau is part of it. And good for David Blau. He doesn't have to work out as a player anymore. And since he was on the practice squad last year, he's probably making more money even as an assistant coach than he was in the practice squad all last season.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like it's a tough one, but it's, you know, it's one of those things that it comes time for everybody, right? Like everybody has to play their last game eventually. And for guys like Blau, and typically happens faster than, you know, others. And for a guy that was drafted, did he go undrafted? I don't even
I believe he was undrafted by Detroit.
Yes. Yeah. So to go undrafted in 2019, I mean, And this is, I don't want anybody to think I'm taking a shot at a guy. So just know this, to go undrafted is, you know, in 2019 to start seven games in your career, it doesn't matter that you went 0-7. Like, there are very few people in this world who can say that they started seven NFL games in their career.
Well, they're, and just the fact that as an undrafted guy, quarterback is such a hard position to kind of grab onto, the fact that he lasted 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022. He got through 5 years in the NFL on NFL rosters, whether it's the active or the practice squad, and that's an accomplishment. He played 5 years in the NFL. That beats the average, because like the average NFL player lasts, what, 2.5-3 years, and he, as an undrafted quarterback, made it five. That's fantastic. Good for him. I'm interested. Like, I will be, you know, the Cardinals will play the Commanders this year at home. I will have an eye on how that offense in Washington, obviously, because, you know, I'm still a Cliff Kingsbury fan. I believe that he is a good coach, and it'll be interesting to see what it looks like when he's under a guy like Dan Quinn and he's just running the offense. Yeah, obviously, David Rye, if you hadn't caught that, David Rye, who was the Cardinals receiver coach for the first couple of seasons before he was let go. That's a story that we never dove into, is what, I don't know why they let David Rye go, because he's close with Cliff Kingsbury, whether it was because they wanted Sean Jefferson, whether it was performance-related, something from upstairs, but he's now the tight ends coach in Washington. So,
well, and you look at it, there was just, I mean, we don't need to go back and rehash old wounds too much, but it just seemed like there was a concerted effort to rid themselves of the air raid of those guys and really focus more on quote unquote NFL offense stuff. And I think Rye just was a casualty of that, because you can't really complain about what you saw in 2020 from the wide receivers of the Arizona Cardinals, when you saw a guy that, you know, had to help this team get to 8-8, you know, get Kyler Murray to a Pro Bowl, you know, almost 4,000 yards passing, you know, get 1,400 yards receiving from DeAndre Hopkins. I think that was Christian Kirk that had his career year at that time too. So, like, just, it makes it tough, man. Like, it just makes it tough, and to see him get a chance at tight ends coach. And this is one of the things that we've said before. And I don't know if people remember this when we were talking last year, you know, about just about offensive coordinators, but man, guys that end up as tight ends coaches, they usually get OC jobs within 2 to 3 years. And that's because, you know, people will understand this is of like, when you're a tight ends coach, you don't have a ton of time that you have to invest in just coaching tight ends. What you're coaching is wide receivers and offensive line. And so when you, you know, and so when you're combining those skills and you're understanding how the run game works through the tight end via the offensive line, and then you're learning how the passing game works, you know, using that tight end almost like as a wide receiver, that's why those guys get those chances, because they're involved in the run game, they're involved in the pass game, they're involved with the offensive line, they're involved with the running backs, because all of that kind of melds together. And so this is a really great opportunity for Rye. And I know it kind of doesn't really have anything to do with Cliff, but you do wonder if Cliff was like, hey, this is a guy I trust, like, can we bring him in?
Yeah, I would guess that was why. Coming up next on the Rise of Seward podcast, best of Cardinals Talk and Law, let's talk a little bit about the Cardinals coaching staff. There's been changes all over the NFL, coordinators, position coaches. Do the Cardinals need to make any changes? That's coming up next on Rise of Seward. We're back on the Rise of Seward podcast, best of Cardinals Talk on the web. The Arizona Cardinals, thus far, we've seen no changes on their offensive defensive staff. We are seeing a lot of movement all over the NFL. Obviously, when you had eight head coaching vacancies that got filled, that means they're going to grab coordinators and position coaches from other places, which leads to movement and hiring of other players and other coaches. As we've seen, San Francisco continues to to lose their guys. Like over the last couple of years, they lost Mike McDaniel, Robert Saleh, D'Amico Ryans. Then you go, they lose Clint Kubiak, they lose Anthony Lynn now. And so they just keep going through guys, just like Sean McVay over in Los Angeles. It's, you know, with the success that they build, they keep, you know, going through guys. And that's a good thing. That said, what we haven't heard is of any changes at all on the Cardinals staff. And after a season in which they were 4-13, and there was lots of bad for certain, should the Cardinals be making, like, especially after that season, should there be any accountability for the coaches of that staff? And I'm of the opinion, like, why would you? Why would you unless someone, like, you're in a good position right now. You are ascending. And you knew this was going to be a bad year. You saw improvement up through the season. So unless one of them finds a better job elsewhere that they're seeking, why would you let anyone go?
Yeah, and, you know, you look at it and you go, okay, so, I mean, we're not going to go through every single coach on here, but, like, Jeff Rogers obviously is going to stay, right? And then the big guys at the top, Drew Petzing, Nick Rallis, you're assuming that they're going to get year two. I mean, there's no reason to move on. Petzing's offense with Kyler at the end was literally a top 10 offense in the NFL. I mean, that's a plus, right? I mean, that's where you want to be. And then Rallis's defense was basically given a mulligan of a year, right? Understanding how little talent there was. So the big three at the top, obviously you're not going to move on from. Drew Terrell, he's a guy that's probably going to get poached if the offense continues to trend in the right direction next year, right? So, you know, so you're not going to move on from him right now. And then you've got the offensive line, which quite frankly wasn't bad. It wasn't good. Did a great job running the ball. Did you not think? I mean, they were fantastic in the run game. So, you know, the O-line, the assistant O-line coach and the running back coach for that matter, you're probably not going to want to move on from. And you look at what they got from the tight ends this year and the improvement of Trey McBride and then the emergence of the kid that picked up whose name's all of a sudden escaping
me. Higgins.
Yeah, Elijah Higgins. So you're not going to move on from your tight ends coach, right? So, and then they don't have a wide receiver coach. Are they missing one or it's Terrell, right?
Like Terrell is their receivers coach and passing in quarters. That's why they were able to bring him to Washington because he was a receivers coach there, but they gave him a coordinator title as well.
Yeah, and then you know your quarterback coach.
Here's the thing. Here, honestly, what was good about this is that how the Cardinals went about this, and I think it was helpful because it was a first-time GM as well. They have so many guys who are in their jobs for the first time in 2023. You know, Motti, first-time GM. Gannon, first-time head coach. Their coordinators, first-time coordinator. Now, Rogers was already there, but many of their position coaches hadn't had that position. Like, they were assistants before, so they were almost all getting promoted. And because it was a new GM, there weren't really guys that you felt were just stuck. Like, they forced them on Gannon. And so Gannon, it feels like his entire staff is guys he wanted. And so in a year where you're building together, it makes absolutely perfect sense why no changes have been made. If there would be a quiet one, like the one notable, like, upheaval that we saw in the coaching staff in last offseason was in the strength and conditioning and how Buddy Morris essentially was replaced, but Buddy also had a critical role. And you could see how absolutely close he and Kyler Murray were. And so while Buddy technically was demoted, he still has a senior position, and And perhaps this is where you kind of want to see him remain, unless he just doesn't like the staff that they have since they expanded the strength and conditioning and player performance. They have a whole new department there. Is having him over player rehab and recovery, I think, is kind of ideal. Like, that would be the only thing to watch for me as the offseason progresses, is if after they put in a new strength and conditioning staff, if Morris ends up getting pushed out quietly during this offseason.
Yeah, and like you said, with what he does, with especially with Kyler, you wonder if that would be something that they wait maybe a full year removed from his injury to kind of go that way. But yeah, I mean, you look at it, I mean, none of these guys are exactly older. Like, I've been clicking through their bios. None of them are older. So, you know, none of them are, like you said, ready to be replaced outside of Buddy. I mean, and not even that Buddy's ready to be replaced, right? But, like, none of them are really at the end of their career. They're kind of all at the beginning of their career. And so it's kind of exciting to see that build. And I think with how well they played at the end or at times last year, you do look at things and say, hey, there's definitely room for improvement. But at the same time, you know, whether it's Derek LeBlanc, who was basically giving you and I and at the defensive line, he's like, hey, make this work. And he did for the most part. I mean, if you had to like look at one position group that you're like, this position group really underachieved, I don't even know who you would go with. I mean, maybe you'd be like, oh, Ryan Smith, the cornerback coach, couldn't get enough out of Marco Wilson. I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing. Yeah. You know, I'm just, but like, for me, it's like, no, I think they got a lot out of a little. And that tells me, and you know, you and I talked about this in August and September. The thing that impressed me the most about this staff was the time they took to coach. You know, there wasn't, and I think it was a twofold thing of, you know, like you said, they're all young. The team's young. So they're like, hey, we need to coach. Like, this isn't just, hey, run this drill that you've done 100 times already. It was like, hey, we need to work on this technique. We need to work on this stuff. And quite frankly, that's just not something that happens a lot because the NFL doesn't allow that time anymore. And so it was kind of a breath of fresh air. So maybe, yeah, they started a little slower. They didn't look as good, you know, and they lacked some talent. But at the end of the day, they were able to do some things and I think accomplish more than what a lot of people were expected while still just winning four games.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web list. Now let's wrap up the show, go into some offseason stuff for the Cardinals, the NFL draft, and the potential of trades for quarterbacks. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals have 3 picks in the first 35 selections. They have 6 in the first 3 rounds. But everyone's attention obviously is on pick number 4 because it feels like there's going to be 3 quarterbacks taken in the first 3 picks. Now that can change. We'll see what happens, but it was an interesting thing that Daniel Jeremiah, I think it was during the Senior Bowl said, or was tangential to the Senior Bowl around that time. And he said that he believed it. Well, there could be as many as 4 or 5 teams looking to trade up in the draft for a quarterback. And that makes you wonder, well, does that even include any of the 3 teams that are already at the top between the Bears and the Commanders and the Patriots? Because if those aren't included in those 4 to 5, maybe one of them is, then you've got other players, you've got other teams looking for quarterbacks. And I wanted to talk about what you think that impacts, how that impacts the Cardinals in their draft strategy and whether it will impact at all the 4th pick, because I'm inclined to believe that unless Marvin Harrison gets selected before the Cardinals pick, that if those 3 quarterbacks come off the board, that the number 4 pick is going to be that's not going to be a pick in play for trading up for a quarterback. But I do think that number 27 and number 35 will be very much in play for tradebacks.
Yeah, and you look at it, I mean, you know, it's one of those where as we get closer, and like I said, I think if there's going to be movement, I think it's going to happen before the draft. You know, and so whether that's Chicago, whether that's Washington, which I doubt, New England's one to watch, because they kind of don't control their own destiny, right? So, like, if they say, oh, Williams and Daniels are our guy, or Williams and Mayer are our guy, and then Williams and whoever their number two is go one and two, they don't, you know, they don't control that. But you look at it, I don't know what to expect with the Giants or the Titans, but it feels like, in saying we know is always a strong statement, but it feels like Atlanta, Minnesota, Denver, and Las Vegas will all be in play. Obviously, as Cardinals fans, we look at that and go, okay, let's say it does go one and two quarterbacks, and then New England goes, nope, not going to happen. We're just going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. and kind of be happy. You have to really decide, right, if you're Arizona, is 8 or you know, 11, 12, 13, is that worth it? And how did your board turn out? Now, we did see them go down to, what was it last year, 9?
Went from 3 to 12.
12 and then back up 6, yeah. So we did see that last year. Maybe that's something they do where they're mostly interested in acquiring a pick for next year, especially from a team like, let's say, Las Vegas, right? And they go down to 13, and then they move back up to 7 with Tennessee, and then, you know, get Alt or Neighbors or Dunze or whoever the player is, whatever it is. I can see that, but like you said, if 1, 2, and 3 are quarterbacks, there's, I don't want to say no way, but it feels like it there's less of a chance that they'll trade from 4.
Right, especially because, you know, kind of the feeling is that after those top 3 quarterbacks, the grade on the quarterbacks then drops. And so you might not be seeing the Giants then have their eye on a quarterback at the top of the round, but the Falcons or the Giants would be, all right, you know, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, they... Right. They have them ranked in the 20s, and so then they can get a guy, a blue chip, you know, in the top 10, and then they can actively move up in back into the first to get that next tier of quarterbacks, and that's kind of the thing where I think we're
so
where number 27 could come and play.
So let's play that out, though, too, because a couple of them that are interesting to me are, like, so let's say New England, right? Obviously, New England is kind of one of the teams to look at, and let's say that they say no on whoever the third quarterback is, just assuming 1 and 2 go quarterback, and then they say no, and the Cardinals go, we're willing to move down from 4, okay, and but nobody wants to play ball. Nobody wants to pay whatever their asking price is. So New England takes MHG at 3, Cardinals go whoever. And then at 27, like you said, you're sitting there. Obviously, Buffalo, I have a really hard time assuming Detroit will do anything. Baltimore's a no. San Francisco could be a wild card, let's admit. Like, there could be a wild card, but I don't see the Cardinals trading with San Francisco if it's quarterback related. And then Carolina's a hard no. They just can't afford to trade up at this point. And so then you get back to New England, and New England goes, okay, we like Bo Nix or, you know, Michael Penix, like you said, one of those guys. And we like them, but we don't want to wait because, in fact, Carolina at 33 is probably a great spot to trade down, right? Because they are limited on picks, they are vast on needs, right? So if you're Arizona and New England comes up and says, hey, let's look at making this trade down, and you trade down that second first round pick. So you go from 27, and these are all approximates, kind of just using the trade value chart, but for to go from 27 to 34, that's about 120 points. Now, that's not a whole lot, right? It's not a ton. But one of the things that we do know is that, one, future picks aren't counted in those points because you don't know where those count. So if you're New England and you say, hey, I'm going to go from 34, which is 560, up to 27, which is 680, and we'll throw in the 60. So you get 34, we'll throw in 68, and the Cardinals need to throw in 90. And that's right around evenish. The Cardinals are giving up 10 extra points. So much suggestion.
They might get thrown in. They probably will get a pick, like a day two or day three pick in 2025.
Yeah, 2025. And so, yeah, much suggestion. I sure agree. And they get an extra fifth round pick in 25, right? And so is that, like, is getting, so is having 34, 35, 68, or 66, 68, 71 enticing? Because obviously, realistically, you're only adding 34 and 68, but that's two more bites of the apple.
And here's the thing financially is, if you, like, especially if you get the end of the first round and you don't, maybe you don't have a first round grade on any of them, you then back out of all the, because first round picks, they're contract completely guaranteed through 4 years. And you drop down to the second round, you're going now down to 2 and 3 years of guaranteed money. So it mitigates that risk just a little bit.
Yeah. And so that's what, you know, you kind of have to look at, like you said, and decide what is the right route to go for you. You know, you go down a little further and you see a team like Minnesota, maybe they don't get that guy in round one, right? Like, they're not able to swing a trade. And like you said, they're not going to take, and we're not saying it's not going to happen, but they don't want to take Penix or Nix or JJ McCarthy or whoever at 11, right? That's too high. But 27 makes a little more sense. Now, they're in a bit of a pickle because they don't have a third round pick. So that makes it tough, because you're basically saying, I'll take a 2 this year, but you're probably going to get a 1 next year. When you assume, like, if you go from 27 to 42,
yeah,
you're either getting a 1 next year, or you're getting like a 2 this year, a 2 next year, and a 3 next year.
Yeah.
So, like, you're getting a big haul. So, like, again,
you have to look at how do their grades look for their prospects in the top 90.
Right, exactly. And so you have to look at it and say, I'm willing to lose that extra bite this year, or I really like the defensive prospects at the top of the 25 draft, you know, just from what the scouts have said, that next year's defensive players are much better at the top of the draft. So if we can get Minnesota's first round pick, and so those are the little nuances that you're going to see for this, because I'm telling you, if one of the first three teams makes, you know, a shocking pick and takes Marvin Harrison Jr.
Honestly, that the New England scenario could very well come up, because if one of those teams, whether it's Washington, and if it feels like New England would be the team to do it, decides to trade for a quarterback, then they probably won't have to give up number 3, right?
Right.
And so they'll have the number 3 pick to then, so they'll use one of the later picks on a veteran or veteran-ish player. Then they'll be able to take Harrison, and then you know, everything starts going crazy. That's if that happens, the first of those three teams to make a move for a quarterback before the draft will then kind of shape what's happening the rest of the way.
And it's going to shape what the Cardinals do at that point, because, like, you do have to consider, even if, let's say, New England, because that's the team that it just feels like, right? Like you said. But let's say New England gets crazy and they get a quarterback via trade, or they sign Kirk Cousins, right? And they're like, you know what we need more than anything is to make sure Kirk Cousins is protected. So we're going to go crazy and take Joe Alt at 3. Right. So then you have Marvin Harrison at 4 and a trade down scenario. And then that's when it gets interesting, because you go, huh? Because that sounds exactly like the same scenario as last year, right? With Will Anderson Jr.
Yes. Yes.
Down to it being a junior as well.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's the thing is, like, as much as it feels like, and it felt like, and we had the debate whether trade down this or Will Anderson, we kept saying, like, Will Anderson's a home run pick. He's a home run pick. Why would you pass on him? And ultimately, we were okay with what they came up with. But this feels the same thing. You're like, take Harrison. That's perfect, perfect fit, perfect prospect. It feels an absolute need that you have. But I have a feeling, I have a feeling that's not going to go 1-2-3 quarterback. Something's going to happen, and it's gonna make things go crazy.
Well, and you and I have joked, and I think we're semi-serious about it. I don't think we're exactly completely joking about it. But, man, wouldn't it just make life more easy if somebody did take him, Marvin Harrison, and then you're just like, okay. and it's not that we don't want him. It's more that it's just like, now
it does
we don't
make draft night more fun. Like, I will say, in terms of covering the team, what they did last year was fun. Yeah. You're like, oh, first of all, there's tampering trade, trade back, trade up, more trading back. What the heck? That was a blast. That was a blast last year. But yeah, I when I hear Daniel Jeremiah talking about, you know, 4 or 5 teams trading up, everyone automatically thinks top of the draft, right? That's what everyone thinks. When we also know, especially once you get past the, like, the ones that you love, and we think thus far that's Williams, May, and Daniels. But what if teams really only view 2 of those guys in that fashion, and there's a quarterback that drops a bit, and then you get to the next tier. You've got the JJ McCarthy, the Bomnix, the Michael Penix, the Sam Hart, like guys that, or even say Spencer Rattler. Okay. Someone really gets enamored with him, but they don't want to use a first round pick. Someone comes up, they don't trade all the way back to number 27. They might trade up to number 35.
Right. And that's the other thing is that we saw that last year. And I don't know how much people remember, but you know, that was what they did last year, right? They traded their second round pick and moved down and were able to add. That's how they have all these third round picks this year, right? Yeah. And so you look at it, like you said, it's not, you know, the trade value chart is just a great tool. It's not a hard and fast rule, but like you said, like, again, Minnesota's the prime example. If they come up, you're probably looking at a 2 and a 4 this year. So again, that's pick 109. So you go, okay, what is your top 125 look like at that point? Right. And like, is moving down 8 spots worth picking up that pick 109? Or are you saying like, hey, you know, we don't want anything this year. Give us a 3rd next year. And that happens a lot, right? Like, it's like, we already have 3 thirds. We don't, you know, our top 100 is really solid, but after 100, we're iffy on things. And so we'll take 42 this year, and we want your 3rd round pick next year. And all of a sudden you've got 2 3rd round picks next year already in the bag before day 2 even really gets started. And so that's the funny business that they have. And, you know, as they move down past that, because again, you know, Washington, the Chargers, Tennessee's a maybe, New York's a maybe, obviously, but all those teams, are probably not trading up for a quarterback. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't other players that they wouldn't trade up for. So it's not, you know, a hard and fast quarterback, but typically that's what's moving the needle on these situations.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast, Best Air of Cardinals Talk on the Web, episode 516. We'll be back next week with more. I don't know if we're going to keep doing the two. We're going to try to do as many two shows per week schedule as we can. I know we've got the combine coming up, but I know next week we can delve into biggest off-season questions from there. But we'll be back in a few days. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.